Edgar Winter has made over 20 albums in his career. You've heard songs like When It Comes, Round and Round, one of the most legendary songs in classic rock history, Free Ride. I loved the song They Only Come Out at Night off Winter Blues. We've got that one in the format. You hear a little bit every once in a while on KZ95. That'd be a good Halloween-type song today, but I think we're going to go with Frankenstein, and we are going to hear about that next through some hard work. We tracked down Edgar Winter and have him for just a couple minutes this morning. How are you, Edgar?
Hey, Brian, are you ready to rock and roll?
You are up this morning. We do thank you for your time.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And I guess I should also throw in there collaborations with a lot of people. I don't know if everybody knows this. You played the saxophone on Tina Turner's The Best big hit.
Yes,
song.
I did. Dan Hartman, who had been the bass player with the Edgar Winter group and played on Frankenstein, was the producer. And that's actually how that came about. But, you know, Dan went on to produce Tina Turner. He also did James Brown and wrote that song, Living in America, that was in the Rocky movie. So it was very cool. And I was on the video as well on The Best. And as everyone can probably remember, that was the HBO theme for a while, simply The Best.
And recently been touring with Ringo Starr's band.
Yes, I did the Ringo All-Star Tour again for the third time, and it's just one of my all-time favorite things in the world to do. There's nothing cooler. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the Beatles are in a class unto themselves, and they really changed the mindset of an entire generation. They brought about a revolution without firing a shot because it was a revolution in the freedom of thought. And all about peace and love, and you know that you know, aside from the great music, one of the things that I love most about it and respect most about Ringo is that he is such a heartfelt advocate and spokesman for peace and love. And you know, having played the original Woodstock with my brother Johnny back in '69, you know, that really changed my life. So it all resonates with me. So it was really great. Every day I would wake up, wow, I'm going to be on stage with one of the Beatles. Really, I mean, how much cooler can it get?
And you were also on stage, I believe, if I have my facts here right, with a guy who comes to Jackson every once in a while and does a rock camp, Greg Bissonette.
Yes, Greg was the drummer. Yes.
Yeah, he's been here a few times. He's a real nice
and
guy.
And Greg played, he's a great drummer, a North Texas graduate, one of the great music schools, and I of course, am from Texas. But he played on a swing version of Frankenstein that I just sort of casually and laughingly referred to as Frankie Swings, that was on a CD called Jazz and the Blues, and it's sort of a jazz version of Frankenstein, and it was a big band arrangement, and Greg really did a great job playing on that, and he played on one other song as well.
So working in radio, I always hear all these old-timers talking about how they had to cut the tape and splice edits and ads and things like that, and now it's all done on computers. I read that the name of this song, Frankenstein, actually came from that process back in
the early 70s. Yes, it did. You know, I've told the story many times, but it certainly seems appropriate, you know, since Halloween is closing in. But, you know, most people imagine or think that the song Frankenstein had something to do with identification with the, you know, with the Frankenstein monster, you know, in the movie. And you know, I had read the book, you know, the Mary Shelley book, and the creature in the book is entirely different than the one that's portrayed in the movie. He's very intelligent and you know, speaks and writes, it's a whole different trip. But the song was actually written years before, thought of recording the song. I wrote it when I was playing with my brother, Johnny. As a matter of fact, we performed a version of it at Woodstock, which, as I said before, was 69. And Johnny was still playing with his blues band, and he would do the first part of the set with his blues trio, and then he'd say, "And now I'm going to bring on my little brother Edgar." And nobody even knew that I existed at that time. I had never recorded anything, and people just, "Wow, there's two of them." And we played not the exact song, but the basic riff, you know, that later became Frankenstein. We played, and we called it the double drum song because I played Hammond organ, I played Hammond B3, and played alto sax, and then I did a dual drum solo. We had two sets of drums on stage, and I did a dual drum solo with Johnny's drummer Red Turner. So, having played that song, we forgot about it for years, and with the advent of the synthesizer, I happened to be the first person to come up with the idea of putting a strap on a keyboard, and I don't know why no one had thought of it, but, you know, having played piano and organ for years, I had gotten really frustrated being stuck behind a big bank of keyboards, and, you know, nobody can see what you're doing. You know, you're just stuck there, and you've got a sustain pedal and a volume pedal, and people really can't see your hands. It's not very fun or exciting to watch, you know. And I said, why do guitar players get to have all the fun? You know, I want to get out there and boogie. So one day I was walking through the music store, and I saw these new instruments, synthesizers. There were basically there was the Moog, pioneered by Robert Moog, and then there was the ARP. The ARP 2600 particularly caught my eye because it was in two pieces. It had like a mad scientist looking contraption that was the brains or the guts of the instrument with all kinds of cool sliders and knobs, and then the keyboard was separate, connected by a long, snaky umbilical cord, and I looked at the keyboard and said, wow, it looks like you could just put a strap on this thing and play it like a guitar, which is exactly what I proceeded to do, and as they say, the rest is history! So, I was looking for a song to feature the synthesizer as a lead instrument, and I thought of this old song that I used to do with Johnny that we used to call the double drum song. I said, well, I bet that old double drum song, I bet that riff would sound really cool with that reinforced subsonic synth bottom. So we worked it up as a live song, never with the intention of recording it. And, you know, I'll never forget that first night that I walked out with the keyboard, and it was one of those real rock and roll moments. I walked out, and the crowd just went crazy. It was, people couldn't believe it. So we were in the process of making the album, and the album was still untitled. We hadn't come up with They Only Come Out at Night as yet. And we thought Free Ride was the obvious had the obvious hit potential. It sounded like a radio song to us, and it was like right at the end of the project. And back in those days, bands would go into the studio with three or four songs and actually try to create music in the studio, and they would you'd come up with riffs and actually write and record on the spot, and I think that was part of the magic of that era. And I really do believe, I think that we're all tempted to think that the time in which we grew up was somehow special, but I really do believe there were two golden eras in music, the 40s and 50s for big band, jazz and swing, and the 60s and 70s for rock. And I think a big part of it was that freedom, unparalleled freedom in the studio that just gave artists the artistic license really to do whatever they wanted. So the cardinal rule was tape is always rolling, and we just happened to have some versions of the song that still wasn't titled. We just were calling it the instrumental. It was like that the synthesizer instrumental at that point. And it was just really fun to play. So we'd come into the studio and just jam out on that just to warm up. And we had like a couple of really long 15-20 minute versions of it. And Rick Derringer, who toward the end of the project said, "Hey, you know, maybe we could edit that into something usable." And that sounded crazy to me, but I love crazy ideas. So I said, "Yeah, I guess that we're playing it live. It doesn't seem to have anything to do with the rest of the songs that we've written." And I really felt that the key to the real strength of the band lay in the co-writing with Dan Hartman, and I thought, well, it'll be a great excuse to have a big party at the end of the thing and get even more blasted than usual, and we'll have a big editing party. And as you pointed out, back in those days, the only way to edit something was to physically cut the master tape, which was sort of a harrowing experience, like cutting a diamond, because if you mess it up, it's gone. And of course, you'd make a safety of it. You'd make a safety recording, but it's not as good quality. If you mess up the original, then you lose a generation. So there was real pressure on that, particularly on the engineer, the guy that was doing the tape editing. So basically, you just cut it with a razor blade, and then you use splicing tape to tape it back together. So it was lying all over the control room, draped over the backs of chairs and overflowing the console and on the couch, and we were like, looking at it and saying, wow, now what are we going to... this is the main body of the thing, and we were like singing that old spiritual song, foot bone connected to the ankle bone connected to the leg bone. Dry Bones is the name of that song. And trying to figure out how to arrange this into a coherent piece, and Chuck Ruff, the drummer, mumbled the immortal words, "Wow, that is like Frankenstein." Drawing the analogy of an arm here, a leg there, and pasting the thing back together. And as soon as we heard it, I said, wow, that's it, Frankenstein. It even sounds like just the visual imagery of it was perfect. It really sounds like a hulking, lumbering monster. So the monster was born, and there you have the story of Frankenstein.
Your older brother played guitar. What got you into the piano, keyboard, synthesizer area?
Well, my mom played classical piano. My father played guitar and banjo, and he played alto sax in a swing band in his youth. And he had a barbershop quartet that would come over to the house and sing. So Johnny and I our first instrument was ukulele. And our dad showed us our first chords on the ukes. And as little kids, we used to play the ukuleles and sing Everly Brothers songs. And then Johnny graduated to guitar, and I played guitar for a minute. But it became apparent Johnny was going to be the guitarist. So I said, well, I'm just going to play everything else. So there was a piano in the house, and I naturally... picked that up. I played electric bass for a while after guitar. And then in my teens, I played drums after that. And these were all in my brother Johnny's bands. Our first band was Johnny and the Jammers. And I played tenor guitar in it to begin with, and then I switched to bass, and I switched to drums for a while, and finally I picked up the saxophone, which I consider my main instrument in my teens, and got really interested in jazz and classical music. And a lot of people aren't even aware that I'm a sax player. I think that they think of me and identify me with keyboard, because I was really a pioneer of the keyboard, being the first person to come up with the idea of putting the strap, on the synthesizer keyboard. And that was such a dynamic image that was sort of unforgettable. So, it's certainly another aspect of what I do. But that's basically how the whole thing came about.
And again, we've been talking with Edgar Winter. We will get Frankenstein on next for you. Is there any way we could get you to announce that, saying something like, "This is Edgar Winter. Here is my song, Frankenstein, for everybody"?
Sure, you got it. All right, everybody, get ready for the indestructible monster. Here comes Frankenstein.
Here it is for you, folks.